Well, it's 6 o'clock in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. Sunday, it means it's time for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And on deck, as per usual, we've got Dr. Renee Boyce. And she has a very important guest with her. So let's go right across and say a very good evening to Dr. Renee Boyce. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Resident. How are you?
I am good, thank you. Good.
Okay, it's great to be here another Sunday evening on the Better Health Radio Show, where we help you to live your best life. And as Garston said, I do have a very important guest with me this evening, but let me take this opportunity to welcome all of our listeners and thank you for tuning in each week. It's always great to run into somebody who says, you know, I listen every week, or my aunt, she listens all the time. She's there by the radio. She doesn't move on Sunday evening. So it's really great to have all of you on board. This evening, if you want to give Garston a call in the studios, that's 434-1790. And if you want to send a message via WhatsApp, that would be 266-4862. On the behalf of the Better Health Radio Show, I take the opportunity to wish Starcom Network a happy birthday, happy anniversary. As it is, I believe that this is 40 years that they're going to be celebrating. So we wish them the best in their future endeavors as a media house and all of the success.
Well, on behalf of the company, I say thank you kindly.
Oh, you are most welcome. This evening, I have with me Professor Anne St. John. Professor Anne St. John has been a stalwart in so many areas, and she's practically one of us here on the Better Health Radio Show as well. She has been here several times championing the cause of pediatrics. She is a pediatrician by profession. And we're going to be discussing a very relevant topic today. Good evening, Professor St. John.
Oh, she's muted there for a second. Yeah, try it again now.
Good evening.
Wonderful.
Fine. Good evening. It's great to be here. And I'd also like to wish Starcom all the best on their 40th anniversary.
Thank you kindly.
So this evening we have... Oh, yes, Grayson, you want to say thank you to Prof too?
He did.
She heard me. Oh, I did. Okay. Well, thank you, he Doc. Thank all of you.
Listen to me, sir. Okay, Prof, we have lots to discover, lots to discuss, and we want to advise our listeners. So those of you who have children, grandchildren, godchildren, who are responsible for the children at the day nurseries, at the nursery schools, what we're going to discuss today is very relevant. And today, Prof, we're going to start with local data. We're going to start with the adults because children come from adults. Children pattern the habits that they see the adults carrying out. So let's talk about some of the very alarming statistics that we found here in Barbados as regards the chronic diseases in our children and our adults.
That's thank you very much. I'd like to focus today and use the main theme of my discussion as our wise choices being made for our children. World Obesity Day was recently observed on March the 1st, and to give some information about the statistics which you mentioned, our local research reveals that 8 out of 10 deaths in Barbados are caused by non-communicable diseases, and these are diseases which are not spread through person-to-person transmission, for example, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, high blood pressure, conditions like that. And 1 in 5 adult Barbadians have diabetes. 66% of the adults are known to be overweight and 33% obese. And obesity is another extension of overweight. It's a percentile category, which is overweight. And the prevalence of obesity is almost twice as high in women, 43%, and in men, 23%. However, alarming information is that 1 in 3 of our children in Barbados is overweight or obese. And this is our focus in recent years to note the increase in weight gain in our children.
So we know that 1/3 of our children already have been disadvantaged in life because they're overweight and they're obese. we know that it is difficult for children who are overweight or obese to, I don't want to say it's impossible to lose those weight, but we tend to see that children who are overweight or obese tend to become overweight or obese adults. And we also see patterns where overweight and obese adults have in their families overweight and obese children. And I saw a classic example just this afternoon. A parent walked by. Yes, I saw, I'm going to assume she was the mother, and she was obese. And I saw a child, if I had to estimate based on experience, I would say maybe about 9 years old maximum. And she was obese. She had a very round tummy and chubby cheeks. And you could see that she already at that young age was already obese. What is contributing to this obesity in our children?
Yeah, this is multifactorial. And research shows that if you have two parents who are of average size and weight, the child has a less than 7% chance of being obese. But if you're born into a family where one parent is obese, there is a 40% chance of that baby being obese from the first day it's born. And then an 80% chance if two parents are obese. So you can see that the odds are against you from even birth. From the time the little baby puts its face outside, it can be disadvantaged depending on the parent's weight.
Yeah, one of the things that we want persons to know is that there are babies who are obese as well. We are of the perception, and I call them the Michelin Man babies, the babies who look
like sumo wrestlers.
Yes. You see, the reason I'm laughing is, Gretchen, I was one of those persons at school. If I were ever to get in trouble, it would have been because of other persons who were laughing and
Oh, it's my fault.
I laughed. Uh-huh. So it's Gretchen's fault that I am chuckling because he's in studio breaking down. But yes, the Michelin Man, where you see these different roles in his arms and the roles in his legs, like Prof said, the sumo wrestler. And everybody thinks that this baby is so chunky. I remember, again, Prof, where I was doing a checkup for a child who was 9 months. The child was not walking, so I know the child was less than a year. And I could not get that child lifted to put them on the examination couch. I am not exaggerating. The child was that heavy under a year.
But I'll share with you something of interest that babies, we try to say breast is best and promote breastfeeding. And the totally breastfed baby is tending to be overweight. And by a year, they start to lose their weight and lose that baby fat. But generally speaking, babies are born about 7 pounds in weight. You may get a baby who is 9 pounds. Sometimes they're born to a mother who has diabetes, gestational diabetes, or diabetes in pregnancy. And the baby tends to be overweight because the mother's diabetes is out of control. But it has been shown that the amount of weight gained in pregnancy is proportionate to the birth weight of the baby. And the average weight gain in pregnancy is about 25 pounds, 12 kilos. However, any lady who gains 30, 40 pounds in pregnancy, the chances are that her baby has a large birth weight than normal. And the baby is a parasite. They pull from the parent. So you have to look at things like weight gain in pregnancy is directly proportional to the size of the baby, and the tendency for later in life developing NCDs has been shown as well.
Yeah, there is a serious misconception during pregnancy that the mother is eating for two. So she has to eat a serving for herself and then something else to feed the child, because she needs her own set of food and the baby needs his or her own set of food. But like you said, babies are parasites. They're able to get whatever they need from whatever we take in. So this is the first note for those persons who are pregnant or planning on becoming pregnant, that your nutrition has a significant impact on the outcome of your child's weight and well-being in life. So every time you put something in your mouth, think about how that will impact on your child in his or her future.
There's also a theory about fat cells increasing during the first 2 years of life. So if the infant gets too much excessive portions, just a lot of calories, they can have a tendency to increase their weight faster than other children who are born of an average size of weight at birth. So there are several factors which are very important here. And the type of diet and nutrition which the child is receiving also plays a significant role in the outcome and weight gain.
Well, you've mentioned nutrition, Prof. Let's talk about how the current nutrition practices of our, well, parents and by extension our children are leading to this trend of obesity. One-third, one in three, 33% of our children here in Barbados are overweight or obese. How is nutrition playing a role in these children's lives?
We've found, looking at research, that global data shows that comparative trends in dietary selection by age, Barbados compared to other countries, that the overall consumption of sugary drinks was more than doubled. It's unfortunate I can't show the graph, but it's quite concerning to show that globally, the consumption of sugar is like one third of what we consume in Barbados. I know we're a sugar producing country and we should support the local industry. However, the overconsumption of sugary drinks more than doubled for the global comparison. And it's been shown, research has shown that sugar consumption is a major contributor to obesity and its related diseases, increasing the chances of developing type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, liver and kidney damage, and heart disease. Even some cancers are associated with this. So sugary drinks really have no nutritional value and are particularly harmful to the body. Even liquid sugars and what we call other sugar sweeteners, which we use to sweeten beverages, are absorbed more quickly by the liver and processed in a way that it increases fat and glycogen deposits. And this can lead to the fatty liver disease and increase of developing tendency for developing diabetes and other NCDs. So the sugar, I know people might be tired of hearing about sugary drinks, but the campaign is we like things too sweet. We need to moderate the amount of sugar that the children are having.
One of the things that I liked seeing when I had passed through the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados, and let's take the opportunity to say hello to the persons over there at Heart and Stroke Foundation and the youth gym over there as well. We'll talk a little bit about the youth gym, but and we've seen it on the internet as well, a visual representation of the amount of sugar in some of the products that are consumed by our children, because sometimes we don't understand how much sugar we really are taking in by consuming these different beverages. We take a carbonated beverage in a bottle, for instance, and we don't read the serving size. And sometimes the entire bottle is two servings. And the I don't want to say the poor children, but the children, and when I say poor, I don't mean financially poor. I mean disadvantaged, unfortunate in this particular case.
Unsuspecting.
Unsuspecting, that is the best word for this. They end up taking two servings of sugar that they really should not have had. And sometimes there are 14 teaspoons of sugar in some of these beverages that our children consume, three in one day.
Definitely, that has been shown. Research has shown that, local research, international research. And looking at what we call the sugar board, over on one side, we have water, which has 0 teaspoons of sugar. And there is a range. If you look at things such as energy drinks, 9 spoons of sugar in a cup serving, even the little juice drinks, which are served, and many a parent does not recognize that they're not juices. It says juice, they are juice drinks, and they contain about 7 to 9 teaspoons of sugar in there. Now, the amount of sugar which is recommended is a maximum of 25 grams a day, which is about 6 spoons of sugar in total. These little box drinks and even the flavored milk contain at least 8 or 9 teaspoons of sugar. Now, we're looking at chocolate flavored milk, 13 teaspoons of sugar. We're looking at things like various I wouldn't like to say, but the carbonated beverages, which are containing 16 teaspoons of sugar in 2 servings. And these are just getting a lot of marketing, and our students are thirsty, they're hungry, and water is the best. So thirsty, drink water. And we've tried to push water. Heart and Stroke Foundation, Childhood Obesity Coalition, Healthy Caribbean Coalition, drink more water and just omit those drinks. Because in addition to the damage from the sugar consumption, the sugar makes the students hyper. And the color in the drinks, which are energy drinks as they're promoted, also makes them hyper. So the teachers know after break and after lunch, the students will not settle, some of them, in the classroom because they've had the drinks, which have a lot of caffeine and sugar. So part of our message is drink more water instead of.
Yes, so that's our second point for today. The first one, recapping, is for those persons who are pregnant or planning on becoming pregnant to take account of what you will have an impact on your child's life, his or her health, the possibility of that child getting diabetes or hypertension later on in life depends on what you do as a mother whilst pregnant. The second thing is drink more water. And I'm putting out a challenge. I am putting out a challenge to parents to go and take a glass of water and see if you would actually put 14 to 16 teaspoons in that glass of water and drink it. Because by visualizing how much sugar you're putting in there, you're recognizing, well, this is way too much sugar. But this is what our children are having on the roads at 7:30 in the morning. This is what our children are having on the roads at 3:30 in the evening. And I'm sure this is what they have at school during
lunch.
The day. So I know that they're... Yes, I know that's lunch. I know that there's a campaign going on in our schools. Let's talk a little bit about that campaign, Prof.
Yes, we've had the Heart and Stroke Foundation about 2 years ago decided we'd make some approach to the Ministry of Education, who were extremely cooperative, and 6 model schools were selected. And these were selected based on who responded first. So we had 4 secondary schools and 2 primary schools. The principals were very keen on responding, and they did this agreeing to take part in the model school program. The model school program involved instruction of the students, encouraging health clubs to be formed, encouraging the primary schools to have vegetable gardens, and then the students would try to do that at home as well. Water instead of sugar-sweetened drinks. And they did sign up on a memorandum of understanding, the principals did, that certain things would not be happening in the schools. They also tried the canteens to see that they were serving healthy, nutritious meals, trying to have some discourse with the vendors who were on the premises about what they served, meaning low salt or no salt, low sugar, no sugar, and drinks like water and flavored drinks, which were not high in sugar. And get moving, keep fit, activity. They're half of an hour per day of moderate physical activity. So these were things which the model schools agreed to sign on to, the principals, and then we had monitors who went out and evaluated the schools every few weeks to see that things were going well, and doing some counseling and surveying what was happening. And the program was quite successful. We look forward after COVID, and I don't know when that will be, to extending the program to every school, secondary and primary school, because in the end of the day, it's a win-win situation. Our healthy students, fit, trying to change what they're taking, their snacks, their servings, and things of that nature.
Well, you may have uttered in the past few months that hasn't had COVID in it in one way or another. And we willingly admit that our world has been changed tremendously because of the impact of COVID-19. Let's talk about how COVID-19 has impacted upon the lifestyles of our children and the results and consequences as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic on our children.
Well, it's been very unfortunate. COVID has really hit us for six, not only economically, but health-wise. And during the past year, the region has been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic in a very significant way. And it has undoubtedly exerted devastating effects on the economy, health outcomes, and aspects of life. It's been shown that individuals with the NCDs are at a higher risk for severe COVID. And the occurrence of the pandemic has placed tremendous strain on food security. So we found unhealthy diets influenced by high density and low cost processed foods as people's economic situation has been impacted, especially the lower income groups. Then we found the high intake of sugars, fats, and salt continue to be observed because these foods, a lot of these foods are cheaper or less, more suitable to the pocket. And what can be termed as a regional silent obesity and NCD epidemic has been observed, alas, unfortunately. And the COVID-19 pandemic has added to the vulnerability of persons who are living with NCDs as well. Now, it's very fortunate that the children tend to be asymptomatic and we don't have much of a mortality, if anything, from COVID. We've had one child who died with the MIST syndrome, which is a very unusual complication of COVID, but certainly the relatives have been impacted. And one significant question is, are wise and healthy choices being made for our children? It's a fact that children really need adequate nutrition to maintain adequate growth, cognition, skills, learning, and to thrive. And if they're not getting adequate nutrition, we start to see all of these sequelae as they're growing older.
Okay, I lost you a little bit there, Prof. Sorry about
yes.
that. I lost you at cognitive skills, that our children need adequate nutrition for cognitive skills.
The skills, that is meaning to learn and to accomplish and to thrive, to grow and develop their secondary sexual characteristics are delayed. Things of that nature happen when you don't have adequate nutrition, malnutrition developing. And obesity is a form of malnutrition. Formerly, we used to have what we call kwashiorkor, which is the sugar baby, and marasmus, which is the skinny, skinny, scrawny child. However, we've moved now to the obesity, which is also a form of malnutrition.
Yes, and that's our third point for this evening. Obesity is a form of malnutrition. And one of the things that we need to be real about, and we're going to try to provide for parents reasonable solutions because we have to be realistic. In, let's take a family, for example, there are four children in this family. One adult has been laid off. So there's only one individual working now in this family. And we've spoken about those foods which are calorie dense, nutrient poor, but you have four mouths to feed. What are you going to do? You're going to buy what you can afford. And unfortunately, what can be afforded is usually what is not the best in terms of health quality. And so this begs the question, what are we going to do as a nation? Because that you say, we don't know where COVID is going. We don't know when COVID is going. And some changes are going to, we're going to need to make some serious changes pretty soon, or we're going to have 2/3 of our children being obese. And not only the diet is impacting on our children, but now our children are even more disadvantaged in that they're sitting down at home behind devices. Some of them used to be able to go to school and run a boat. And even whilst they were at school, our children were becoming lazier. Because I remember back in the day when I was in secondary school, the guys in my form, they used to run about until their socks drop down. So I could see them now in my mind's eye, pulling back up their socks in the middle of the football field and then going again. And they used to stop 10 minutes before the end of class so that they would cool down, before the start of class, so that they could cool down. But no, children don't run around. They don't. They run around with their fingers on devices, and they play football matches on the tablet, and they don't sweat. They're
yes. not active. And since we've had the lockdowns, amongst the observations, it's noted many children are consuming empty calories. In other words, foods that have no nutritional value while attending online school from home. So they have, for example, secondary school students, even primary school, 4 and 5 hours of sitting and attending online classes. Their patterns of irregular time scheduling for eating, there's increased snacking, there's often unrestricted access to food. So while they're during the class, they're eating. Now, if they're in face-to-face school, they cannot be eating. They're only allowed to eat breakfast, lunch, and after school. And with the consumption of the excessive portions, another observation has been consumptions of food high in salt, sugar, and fat. So packaged crisps and potato chips and things that you just open a package and eat. And the parents now, some are working online at home in another room, so they can't supervise them. Or if parents are not there and they're there with some care provider because better cannot be done. So the online schooling coupled with the pandemic restrictions has resulted in reduction in the physical education. They're not even going outside, hardly much at all. And a lot of screen time, usual screen time recommendations, no more than 2 hours a day. So, you know, online school, they're getting about 4 or 5 hours, plus they have their pleasure time. So a student can spend 90% of their wake time on a device. Moving more and eating less.
Yes, it really is sad, but I like that point you made. When children are at school, you would have had breakfast before you left home in most households. You get to eat at lunchtime and you get a break. And then you eat when you go home. Maybe you could buy a snack after school, but you're not eating on the hour when you're at school. That's school. You should that not is... be eating on the hour, but several parents say that's what happens. Every hour the children are hungry. Hey, mommy, can I have something to eat, please? And the poor parents who are there, they you know need to get back to their work. So you need to fix something for the child, and it's not usually something healthy.
No, it isn't. I recommend, I usually take a dietary information on from the parents to see in children who are obese what exactly the child is having. And the recommendation is substitute. If the child is hungry, sure, substitute. Instead of giving them a jam puff or a turnover, give them an apple, give them grapes, give them carrot, give them some cucumber. Those are snacks that will go into the stomach and keep them content. But the high starch and high sugar snacks are what really are not helping them at all.
One of the problems we have too from the beginning, Prof, is the palates of these children. You're speaking about giving children, you know, carrots and giving them grapes and so on. But the children's palates have become familiar with a different taste. They prefer the sugar.
They prefer
the salt.
We advise as a pediatrician, do not taste the child's food. When they start to have solids at 6 months, to the parents, do not taste, do not add things that you want to taste. Just boil the food, crush it, and give it to the baby, because the sugar and salt palate, do not have the salt and sugar shaker on the table. You don't need it, and don't add salt to the food unnecessarily. These are all things that people start, and it's like a craving. The sugar is a craving. The more you eat, for example, Skittles, those little sweets, the more you want to eat. And the sugar, it really becomes an addiction. The carbonated sweet drinks, the same thing. You drink one, you must have more and more and more. Whereas if you drink water, you don't have that craving to drink more and more and more. So there's a lot of scientific evidence, and behavior modification is extremely important from early.
I was going to ask you, how do we as healthcare providers make the changes? But we're going to take a call and then we'll get back to that question.